He's a gift to the world of medicine and his patients. He was a brilliant nephrologist, was one of the most highly trained doctors in Gaza. He was transforming the care of patients with chronic renal disease, the same patients that I told you are now subject to a slow and horrifying death. He spent a decade learning how to serve his people. He also has a very young family. He was killed dead in his wife's home along with his father.
His father, his father-in-law,
Wife,
and his brother-in-law.
his young children, and the rest were under the rubble at the moment, and they've been calling out to the Red Cross to try and help evacuate, and the Red Cross cannot reach them for all the reasons that I mentioned. I can't believe that I'm having to say this, but healthcare providers, healthcare facilities, civilians have to be protected. He mentioned in his interview to you that
We're having a little trouble with Dr. Hashhasan's Skype. We're going to play that interview. Dr. Hashhasan, can you hear me? Well,
I can.
You're breaking up a bit. I wanted to bring in another doctor into this conversation as you talk about the doctor whose interview we are going to play in just a minute. Dr. Ben Thompson was also a friend and a colleague of Dr. Hamam Alo. He's a nephrologist in Toronto, where you are now, too. Dr. Ben Thompson, can you also tell us about Dr. Hamam Alo? We're going to play the full interview in just a moment that we did with him just 2 weeks ago.
Thank you, Ms. Goodman. I mean, Dr. Hamam Alo, as my colleague from Médecins Sans Frontières said, was an incredible human being, a committed physician, wonderful father. When I was at his home in September in Gaza City, I was joking with him because I said, "You're such an optimist." You know, he was absolutely convinced. He insisted that if the world knew what was happening in Gaza, that it would intervene and that it would end the suffering for people in Gaza. Like so many doctors in Gaza over the last month, faced with horrible circumstances, he remained committed to his patients. He cared for them despite everything that he faced. The very first interview he did, as he was speaking truth to the world about the horrors that he was experiencing in Gaza, his own home was bombed. Windows, the front door of his house blew off. He went to check on his children. He went to check on his father that lived with him. He put them in a room, and then he came back and finished the interview. And the very next day, he went to work. This was his level of commitment. I'm convinced that if he was here sitting and he was here talking to you, he would have been very clear what he wanted. You know, he was an optimist, yes, and he had good days and bad days over the last month. When we spoke every day, he would talk about how he was committed to developing education programs for today's doctors and the doctors of tomorrow in Gaza. But he also had very, very difficult days, faced with the very difficult circumstances that he faced every day, seeing his colleagues being killed, working in hospitals with no water, no food, no electricity, knowing that his patients who required dialysis treatments three times a week to survive, knowing that they'd be dead within a week without electricity, all 1,000 of them throughout Gaza would be dead, knowing that he still went to work. And those good days where he talked to me about education, he also had bad days. And on those bad days, he would tell me, he was speaking of the horrors that he was seeing. He was experiencing war crimes. He was witnessing them. He would tell me he was experiencing a genocide of his own people. It was horrible. You know, I think at this point, politicians are embarrassing themselves by their inaction. He would have been very clear. He would have wanted... There's things that he would have wanted that I can talk to you about. But, you know, I think we need to remember Dr. Hamam, like many physicians in Gaza, was incredibly committed to his patients.
How did he die, Dr. Thompson? How did he die?
He was hit in an airstrike. He was at his wife's home. He was with his father-in-law and his brother-in-law. His wife and two children, who are 4 and 5 years old, were at his own home, so they survived. But while he was at his wife's home, an Israeli airstrike on his home killed all of them in the home.
So, Dr. Thompson, if you can tell me about your own situation in Toronto, I mean, to say the least, that's very different from Gaza. But you were suspended for a month after you in the hospital were threatened over your comments that you tweeted on X. Can you talk about this?
I think, like many people around the world, I have experienced bullying, harassment, and other negative consequences to speaking out for Palestine. In my situation, I had death threats. I was suspended from the hospital. I had a difficult month, but the reality is my worst day over the last month is nothing compared to, you know, the best day of anyone in the last month in Gaza is still worse than my worst day. And the reality is people like Dr. Hammam would want us to think about, you know, what do we need right now? Yes, I suffered death threats, but the reality is Dr. Hammam was killed. And a couple hundred other healthcare professionals in Gaza have been killed. And it behooves us right now to think, what do we have to do? We must have an immediate ceasefire. We must have rapid and unimpeded access to humanitarian aid. And, you know, speaking with Dr. Hammam at his house in September, he talked about the fact he wanted his children to be able to see a day when they had a free, just, durable, free life in Palestine without occupation. We spoke of this often, and I think it behooves us now as an international community. Yes, many of us have been threatened. The reality is much, much worse for our colleagues in Gaza. The reality is we absolutely need to have a ceasefire, humanitarian aid, and there must be a durable, peaceful, just solution for a free Palestine.
I want to bring Dr. Tania Chassan back into the conversation. We're having a little trouble with your Skype, and ask you to respond to what Israel's saying, that they are attacking the hospital because Hamas has used it as, underneath it at least, or all around it, it is not exactly clear, as command and control.
You know, I get I get asked this question all the time. I got asked this question in 2014. The same accusations were made in 2008, 2009, 2014, 2021. These aren't new accusations. It's also not new that those accusations have not been substantiated. I have worked in these hospitals. I can tell you what they are with certainty. They are healthcare facilities caring for patients with limited resources as a consequence of a 16-year siege, and with healthcare professionals who are the most dedicated doctors, nurses, paramedics, pharmacists that I have met in my entire life. And Dr. Hammam Alul is the perfect example of that, as are Dr. Maisara and every single doctor who has been killed, and nurse and paramedic and microbiologist. I mean, over 200 healthcare providers have been killed to date, and they have been screaming for international protection. So I can tell you that they are functioning health facilities caring for patients. And regardless of whether accusations of military activity around those hospitals are substantiated, it is an international, it would be considered a war crime to target them if they are functioning as a healthcare facility, and they are. That I am confident of. I am also confident that I have never personally seen any evidence of military activity in and around these hospitals. And that is the most that I can say to this. And I think that the important thing to remember is we keep getting sucked into these arguments where we're justifying these preposterous justifications for the violation of international law. And instead of constantly trying to defend something that's completely, to defend against something that's completely preposterous, I think we need to refocus on what is clear. What is clear is over 11,000 Gazans have been killed to date. Almost 200 Palestinians in the West Bank have been killed. Healthcare facilities are directly targeted with intent. Ambulances are directly targeted with intent. The entire infrastructure of a civilian population, everything that is needed, that is indispensable to their survival, from food to water to medical facilities to their shelter, everything has been targeted, intentionally targeted and destroyed. That is what we should be focusing on. There are also, you know, almost 5,000 children who have been killed that we know of, but we don't have statistics from the last 48 hours because they have completely destroyed the ability to even expose these atrocities. And, the last message that Dr. Hammam Alul had sent just a few hours before he was killed to one of my colleagues, he said, your shouting means a lot to us. Please keep it up. And I hope what Dr. Ben Thompson, what myself, what every humanitarian doctor or provider or human out there who is screaming about these atrocities, we paint this horrific picture. And I hope it inspires your viewers, the politicians everywhere, to get up and respond to this avalanche of suffering with an avalanche of solidarity and action, because this is not a world that I want to live in. This is not a world that my colleagues want to live in. And this is not a world that we want to raise the next generation of children in. We have museums all around the world that remind us that this is not what we want for humanity. And this is our opportunity to assert that.
Dr. Hash Hassan, there is a new acronym that was coined in Gaza over the last few weeks, WCNSF, Wounded Child, No Surviving Family. Can you explain?
Yeah, I mean, over 1,000 families and have been killed. They've had at least two members of their families killed in the last month. Many families are completely wiped out because these are I don't know much about weapons, but I can tell you they are very violent weapons that wipe out entire multi-story residential buildings where families are sheltering in seconds. And you have had so many families wiped off of the civil registry. Sometimes a child survives, and not infrequently, one person in the family survives. And so it was happening so frequently that they had to coin a term for it and sometimes even write it on the bodies of the patient. Sometimes they even just write the words unknown because it's a child with no surviving family to even identify the child. And, you know, it's not just WCNSF. That is the acronym that has been coined by the Gazan medics. But there's also WMNSF, Wounded Mother, No Surviving Family, WFNSF, Wounded Father, No Surviving Family. These aren't acronyms that are used, but they are realities on the ground.
Dr. Tanya Hash Hassan, I'm going to cut you off, but only so that we can hear this last interview that we did, the last interview with Hammam Alul. I want to thank you so much for being with us, Dr. Tanya Hash Hassan, pediatric intensive care physician with Doctors Without Borders. And I want to thank Dr. Ben Thompson, a friend and colleague of Dr. Hammam Alul, who, again, was killed this weekend in an airstrike. The nephrologist in Toronto, Dr. Ben Thompson, traveled to Gaza twice a year since 2013. His charity is called Keys of Health. We're going to break and then come back to hear Dr. Hammam Alul's last words. Stay with us. Oh, Memory of a Palestinian Wound by Amal Mirkus. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. Nearly 200 medical workers have been reported killed in Gaza since October 7th. Over the weekend, Democracy Now! Learned that Dr. Hamam Alo was killed Saturday when an Israeli artillery shell struck his family home, killing him, his father, his brother-in-law, and his father-in-law. Dr. Alo was a kidney specialist, a nephrologist who worked at Al-Shifa, the largest hospital in Gaza. He was 36 years old. He leaves behind his wife and two children, a 4- and a 5-year-old. Dr. Hamam Alo spoke to Democracy Now! On October 31st in one of his last interviews. Dr. Hamam Alo, you've said every day, I see a fear in their eyes that I can't do much about. It's very painful. If you have kids, you know how horrible it is not to be able to comfort them, to ensure they're all right, to make them hope for anything beyond living one more day. If you can talk about that in the hospital, which, as you said, is not just a hospital for sick people. Thousands are taking refuge at Al-Shifa and Al-Quds and the other hospitals. And also, we're talking to you as you just left Al-Shifa. How do you comfort your family? What's happening to your family as you're at the hospital?
I tell them at least we still have a house with a door to close. But many thousands of refugees, people like us who used to live in dignity, have no longer houses and no doors to close to protect them. They are surrounded by wastewater, by garbage. They don't have adequate continuous supply of clean water to drink. Many of them have a lot of missing members of their families. They don't know if they are alive or not. I tell them at least we still have a house to live in, but they don't have. And surprisingly, my 4- and 5-year-old kids, they accept this as a comfort, as a better situation compared to those refugees living. They are living actually in hospitals, but it's not like they are living inside the hospital departments. Many of them do not have enough space to go into hospital hallways, so they are living around the buildings and in the garden. So yeah, surprisingly, my very young kids accept this.
The Israeli military has dropped thousands of pamphlets warning people where you are in northern Gaza to leave. Why don't you go with your family south?
And if I go, who treats my patients? They are not animals. They have the right to receive proper health care.
Doctor,
we can just leave.
The World Health Organization talked about this issue of telling doctors to leave their patients, choosing your own lives over your patients. Can you talk about that choice, since so many patients can't leave, for example, babies in incubators?
You think I went to medical school and for my postgraduate degrees for a total of 14 years, so I think only about my life and not my patients? I'm asking you, ma'am. You think this is the reason why I went to med school? To think only about my life? This is not the reason why I became a doctor.
Can you talk about what's happening to the hospitals? Just in our headlines today, we talked about, and in the last few days, the attack on the Indonesia hospital. The Turkish hospital is the only cancer hospital. You talk about the significance of these places, both as a sanctuary, thousands of people taking refuge, and for patients?
Indonesian hospital is providing health care for over 400,000 citizens in the Gaza Strip. And this part of the Gaza Strip is being split from the rest of the Gaza Strip. If this hospital stops providing care, so we are exposing many thousand Palestinian souls to the dangers of disease and death. Turkish hospital, with its very modest capabilities even before war, was the only hospital providing care and medications for cancer patients from around the Gaza Strip. It was airstruck yesterday. I don't know how many patients and healthcare professionals were wounded. And many patients are dying now because they are not safe with their families to go to receive care and to continue their chemotherapy. The Ministry of Health has declared 2 hours ago also that the electricity would be cut off from Ashifa Hospital, the largest hospital representing 40% of the healthcare power in the Gaza Strip, and providing services for many machine-dependent patients, like the ventilated patients and the hemodialysis patients. So if electricity is cut out from this in this hospital, so we are directly deciding those patients are going to necessarily die. Ventilated patients will die in minutes. Dialysis patients will die in hours to days from stopping their hemodialysis. Many patients are now being treated with the modest supplies we have. Many diabetic patients are now being admitted to the hospital because of their insulin is not being kept in the refrigerator, so it's not working. We are out. We ran out of many medications, like antifungal medications. We have a patient who died earlier this week with mucormycosis. This is an invasive, ugly type of fungal infection that killed her because we had no amphotericin to offer her. So my very simple answer to your question is that this thing is coming to so many people in the Gaza Strip in hours to days. If this continues the same way it's going on.
Dr. Allo, the Middle East Eye reports on a baby who died, says his death certificate has been issued before his birth certificate. A one-day-old baby has been killed by Israeli bombing in Gaza. Israel, the military, the government, says that Al-Shifa, your hospital, is Hamas, the site of Hamas command and control. Can you respond to that, Dr. Allo?
I've been working in this hospital for over 2 years, and I never saw this. So I'm no lawyer, I'm no attorney, but this is how I'm simply replying. I never saw this for over 2 years. If this is true, I would see at least a clue.
I want to ask you about the shipments of aid coming in. Normally, in normal times, if there's ever a normal time in Gaza, over 400 trucks a day. We're talking about a trickle of trucks now, maybe a dozen, maybe eight in a day. Have you ever seen this aid arriving at the hospital? And can you talk about what you need right now?
Well, that number you just mentioned that was allowed into Gaza Strip is actually what you were referring to. It is nothing compared to what we need, nothing compared to the shortage in supplies, machines, and medications we are need for. The only thing I came just as I was leaving the hospital today was cartoons of IV fluid bottles. This is the only thing I saw. And I don't really know if this came through the aid trucks in the few couple of days, or that was from the stores of the Ministry of Health. In addition, I happened to ask about in the hospital administration, and what they mentioned that was all about the gloves and gauze. And this is not what we are actually only in need for. This is what maybe the least we care for, the least we are in need for. So this is, again, nothing compared to what we are in need for in terms of supplies and medications.
Finally, Dr. Hamam Alo, your message at this point to the United States, where we're based, and to the world.
Actually, the message hasn't changed since the beginning of this war. First, we need this war to end because we are real humans. We are no animals. We have the right to live freely. Second, if you want your citizens to live under these circumstances, what would you do for them? This is what we exactly would like you to do for us as a superpower country, as the United States, because you are really as human as your U.S. citizens are. We were expecting more earlier, I mean, solutions for that humanitarian and healthcare catastrophes and the crises, but what we are seeing mainly through trucks allowed into Gaza is nothing compared to us. So we are being exterminated, we are being massively eradicated, and you pretend to care for humanitarian and human rights, which is not what we are living now. To prove us wrong, please do something. Thank you.
Dr. Hamam Alo, speaking to us from Gaza City, where he works at the largest hospital, Al-Shifa Hospital. Please be safe.
I hope I will be. Let's hope both together I will be. Thank you.
Dr. Hamam Alo was speaking from Gaza on Democracy Now! On October 31st in one of his last interviews. He was killed Saturday when an Israeli artillery shell struck his wife's home, killing him, his father-in-law, and his brother-in-law. Dr. Alo was a kidney specialist who worked at Al-Shifa, the largest hospital in Gaza City. He was 36 years old. He leaves behind a wife and two children, a 4- and a 5-year-old. Nearly 200 medical workers have been reported killed in Gaza since October 7th. And that does it for our show. To see all our interviews with doctors, with residents, with Israeli historians and scholars and peace activists, with Palestinian and Israeli peace activists and academics, human rights lawyers, go to democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Is produced with Renee Felsmeitberg, Dina Guzder, Messiah Rhodes, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Taracena, Tammy Warnoff, Tarina Nadura. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hi, this is Jesse Brown, the host of Canada Land, Canada's only media criticism program. Every week I talk to some of the most interesting people in the country about some of the things that matter most. We talk about the news media, about comedy, film, music, and politics. And you can now listen on CJSF 90.1 FM every Monday at 5 p.m. Wait for it.
Thank you. This is Mac DeMarco, and you're listening to CJSF 90.1 Burnaby, Le Chablais.